let that play a minute. Hello.
I love when Cash is producing.
I know all the good music.
Oh my God. You cannot hear this song and not be in
and
a good mood.
Start wiggling a little. You can't not. We're just going to give you some radio time in which we dance and you listen to music. This is what we're going to do. Hello, it's Amy Guth and Doma DiPongo in for WGN Nightside tonight.
It's good to be in the studio with you, finally, officially. We've talked for spurts of 30 seconds.
I know. But you're always over there in the newsroom.
Yes.
Doing your thing.
Yes, and back in the day, I was on six floors away from you, but now I'm down the hall.
That's right.
Talking to you on air in 30 seconds.
And now we're in the same room.
Now we're in the same room.
Make eye contact
there
without
we go.
A monitor involved.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Great.
This is a wonderful thing.
Well, how are you? How's it going? What's new?
Today was Murphy's Law kind of day.
Yeah.
Not only for myself, but our producer, Cash.
I get here thinking I'm going to be the last one here, and both of you guys are having...
Oh,
we got some
God.
Car trouble. We got some traffic on Lakeshore.
It's
all the
been
things.
A day.
It's been a day. Well, there's only an hour left of this day, and yeah. I think we're ending it on a really good note.
On yeah. a very high note.
That's
so
right.
This is awesome. Yeah. Not on such a high note is what's going on over on the East Coast. This hurricane happening right now.
Yeah, we're keeping an eye on the East Coast as Hurricane Florence is making landfall. Probably in the morning is when it's making landfall, but still those winds and the rain and all that's starting to come in. And that's really the tough part is when that wind kicks up, when water starts coming in, then you have storm surge. It's stuff like that. The hurricane making landfall is usually not the hard part. It's usually all the things around it right before and right after.
The stuff that comes with it. And I heard meteorologists talking about it's slowing, but that isn't the issue. It's really the rainfall and the devastation that it caused with all that flooding that happens. And I hate to start the show on a somber note, but you have somewhat of an unfortunate anniversary
today. I was reflecting on this, that it was a year ago tonight, pretty much, that I called Patty Vasquez. I was down there because this time last year we were dealing with Hurricane Irma and Hurricane Maria was making its way into Puerto Rico. Mm. So I was down there. That's like a volunteer thing that I do, totally unrelated to journalism. I went down there. I got deployed to go down there and I did a lot of things. I did a little bit of supply and medical transport. I did some feeding people and some working out of a tent in a field and things like that. That's not,
wow.
I don't know. It's interesting. It certainly like puts you face to face with a lot of human stuff that, you know, makes a lot of other things seem really kind of
really minute.
Yeah. Like just kind of inconsequential. I was thinking that I was like, I don't want to really make it about reporting from there. I'm not in reporter mode. But I was like, I'll talk to Patty and just kind of give her a look at what's going on. Because at that point, Hurricane Irma had already made landfall in Florida and done a lot of devastations because there was a lot of water still. Yeah. So I was like in a parking lot on my phone. I was like, I hope that I get a signal. But talking to her about kind of the economic recovery, what that looks like after a hurricane and how a community recovers after something like that. Because some of it is, you know, really long term. It's, you know, we move on and think, okay, they've cleaned up, the water's gone, but there's a huge financial loss to people. Even just like if the power's out for a day, think about all the stuff in your refrigerator. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money to replace everything in your fridge and freezer.
And I was thinking about the mandatory evacuations, and I'm wondering, where do you go? Like, you know, even I'm not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, I'm not a poor person, and even I can't think of where I would go if I had to evacuate Chicago. How long do you stay at a hotel? How do you account for how much funding that costs to do that? What about people who don't have family members in other areas? What about homeless people in some of these places? Where can they be housed? Was that some of the things that you're helping?
Yeah, a lot of that came up. So there was, we were setting up shelters down there. And that's, you know, that's an issue. And the hardest part of the shelter is not necessarily keeping people, like you want to try to keep the mood, not positive, but at least constructive and forward moving in there and supportive of people, just kind of, what do you need right now? Because sometimes it's like, I just need a minute and a water. Or it's like, can you keep an eye on my kid for a minute so I can fill out these FEMA forms without her, you know, playing around? Everybody needs something different. People that are experiencing homelessness that go to a shelter during that time, eventually that shelter's got to close. And at that point, you're like, well, when someone doesn't have anywhere to go, that's the most difficult part when you have to kind of bring back, roll back those resources. Cause a lot of organizations are really just there for the immediate recovery, you know, for just the couple weeks after, to get people moving forward, get tarps on roofs, make sure if you don't have power, you know, let's replace some of the food. Here's what we've got. Right. We can bring you a hot meal. We can, you know, things like that. You know, there's a lot of stuff to replace. Even something like, I remember a woman like flagged me down in the middle of the street. She waded out in this water and she was like, "Do you have a clean diaper? I just need to put a diaper on my kid." And I was like, "I got a box of them." And I gave her, you know, diapers and toilet paper and paper towels and some Windex and some bleach. And she was like, "Oh, this is perfect. This is what I need." So sometimes just like little things like that, that people need to just kind of start moving forward. And then it's also really, you know, hurricanes don't happen like in Antarctica. They happen in very warm places, right? It's hot. People are,
it's just uncomfortable.
It's a lot. Yeah. And if you don't have power, you're, you know, people are like camping out in the driveway and things like that. But you also see like really unbelievable acts of humanity during that time, you know, where people are like, "You know what? I'm okay, but can you check on my neighbor? You know, she's old and I don't know if she has what
she needs." It reminds me of Katrina. I remember there were people who just got on boats and said, "We're going to go around and see if we can save anybody, go house to house and find out who we can save." Good Samaritans just out there. But kudos to you. Shout out to Amy for doing that. And our prayers go out to everyone in the Carolinas and in Virginia who's experiencing this right now. Shout out to this poor reporter who's standing in the middle of the rain. Is this really necessary?
No, poor guy.
Does he have to stand in the eye of the hurricane to report? Like, we believe it's raining. You don't have to be there.
I know the people on the Weather Channel and all the reporters covering hurricanes and natural disasters, especially, like, they're in these, you know, raincoats with the hood pulled up around their faces, and they're just like,
"As you can see,"
hanging on to a stop sign, like, "As you can see, the wind is really picked up." But then you see people like Jim Cantore, who is clearly like skilling, put on this earth to talk about weather.
You can see
his knowledge and passion on display in weather events like that. That guy will stand there in like waist high water. Maybe
doesn't chest. Flinch.
He doesn't care. He's like, there's stop signs flying at him and license. There's a car rolling
by. It's like
by.
The Matrix is moving and reporting at the same time.
Bob and weave, and he's just kind of keeps going, doing his thing.
Yeah, so, you know, kudos to you. It's funny, though. This is another anniversary. I remember the day that you flew out to deal with this, because just before you were heading out for your flight, I had to interview you for a new series.
That's right.
That Judy Pilak was working on.
And I was like, "I got to go."
She's like, "I got to go. I only have 5 minutes." And proceeded to give me a fabulous 20-minute interview for a new segment that Judy was doing. And the way you were able to take this hat off, put this hat on before you jumped on the flight and save some lives, I said,
I didn't save any lives. I just fed bellies. That's all.
That's a life-saving act, if you ask me.
Well, we say, you know, somebody was describing, I heard somebody, someone I know was describing, he was talking about how the world gets saved, right? He's like, it's not about like a superhero act. He's like, it's people doing what's right in front of me right now, doing these acts. I need to feed these people, do this thing. And side by side, if we are all doing that, eventually it grows. And that's where we make impact.
That's why I'm really excited about the guests we've got coming up. Cop to Yoga, Tiffany Seibert has this, we're going to talk to her later on in the show, but she has this program where she teaches cops how to do yoga before they head out and do some of the most dangerous things that you could ever think of. We can't say it enough. One of the most difficult jobs on the planet. And she's helping them stop, relax, breathe, calm, and center themselves before they go out there and get to it. And those types of things, those incremental things, make a larger difference than I'm sure she might not even be aware of.
Right.
I'm excited to talk to her about that.
Yeah. And then after that, we're going to talk to some folks from the Social Change Film Fest that's coming up.
Yes.
That's going to be really cool. So it's all about like world improvement tonight on the show.
Absolutely. I think we got to take a break.
Yeah, we do. I mean, at this hour,
I mean, we don't have to do
breaks
it.
Are a suggestion.
I mean, kinda.
Yeah, we got.
I don't want to get yelled at. You know.
Yeah, we don't want Cash to get yelled at. We're gonna take.
They're gonna see my Instagram story and see that I was dealing with a car. You know, they're gonna be like, "What were you doing?" I was everywhere.
You'd be
one
like,
time.
You know what? Amy and Domati would not go to break. They're the worst.
Just put it all on us.
Yeah, dump it on us.
You know, I told
fine.
Them
we'll
like five times, and they was like, "No, we're not taking any breaks at all."
Yeah,
you take a break.
Yeah,
wow.
You take a break.
Whoa there. See,
come
on
here,
now
make
we're getting,
us take
whoa there. See, now we're getting very offensive.
Well, we're going to take a break, like but when attacked. We come back, esteemed producer Cash, I want to talk about some stuff you've been doing, because you have been tearing it up and doing some very cool things, and I want to talk about that.
Thank you.
Amy Guth and Doma T. Pongo here on WGN Nightside, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. And mother always told me, be careful who you love, be careful what you do, let the lie become the truth. Again, I just want to let the music play.
Right.
Because when Cash is producing, you know the music's going to be so good.
I try to. This
and anytime like, Michael Jackson is involved. This is
by Mark Ronson. It's called Diamonds Are Invisible. It's like one of the first ever DJs to be put on iTunes, which is just so like amazing to me. I want to be on that level. So I just really, I heavily look up to this mix right here that you are hearing.
This is a cool mix.
This mix made an appearance in a yoga class I was in about a week ago.
It's that good.
She was like, we're going to do some core and we're going to work. And I was like, man. And then I heard it. I was like, wait a minute. We're doing this. Okay.
Wait, this is weird to me. Have you heard of trap yoga?
Yeah.
They've got trap yoga. And I think yoga, I think calm. I think like white noise and ocean sounds.
Not anymore.
How do you have breathing to like trap music and like Michael Jackson? Like, does that work?
It does. Yeah. You'd go through it once slowly and then you do it in flow. And it's just like one breath to one movement. And it's actually very beautiful to see a room of people doing that to some fast music.
That's really cool. Have you ever DJed a yoga?
I have not.
You haven't yet, but I gotta discuss some things with you, because we're gonna work that out. I have this vision. We're gonna make an event. It is gonna be great.
Okay.
But first, let us talk about you, because you are an extremely humble person, and you say things like, I sort of DJ. I would like to be like this DJ. And then meanwhile, I look at your Instagram and your social media other accounts, and you're like,
yeah, I'm in London.
I'm going
DJing.
To London, doing this, sponsored and da da da. Like you're literally an international sensation. Please tell us about this.
Whoa,
people were voting for you to be included in the North Coast Festival.
Yeah,
myself included.
Yes, thank
me
you.
Too. I voted like three times. I don't know if that was allowed.
I appreciate it.
I know. I was
it.
Like
thank
tweeting.
You.
I was like, I'm just saying, this person is my friend, and you should vote.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Thank you so much.
And you won.
I did win. I won the voting round. I won the live competition, and I performed at North Coast Sunday.
How was that?
It was nerve-wracking, and it was only nerve-wracking because the thing with the competition was they had one DJ win, and then two live acts also won. But the live acts were supposed to perform Saturday.
Okay.
And they got rained out. Because of the rain hitting so heavily that morning, they got canceled, like completely cut.
Oh, and you're like, what a shame.
Right. But I felt bad. And I was like, you know what, guys? Like, I have a 45-minute set. Come perform during my set. But we were all kind of worried, like, is it going to rain again?
Yeah.
Am I also going to get cut? And I didn't. I woke up that morning on Sunday, and it was beautiful. It was hot. It was sunny.
Yeah.
And my production manager was actually DJ Snake's production manager. And he just happened to pick up the shift because DJ Snake got cut the night before. And I mean, working with him was a dream, because he made sure he was on his P's and Q's, and he treated me as if I was DJ Snake. And I'm like, all right, buddy, calm down. slow your roll there. But it was a beautiful experience. I can't wait until the festivals come back next summer. The goal ultimately is to perform on a main stage at Lollapalooza. I feel like that's the only like summer festival in Chicago that I missed, because I was at Mambi. Mm-hmm. I was at Pitchfork, and I was at North Coast.
But let's be clear. I feel like you might have missed it because you had to work that night. Like, you didn't miss it because you didn't miss the opportunity. Miss Lollapalooza this year. Like, that's well
right,
within reach.
Because you were working.
Because you've worked. Like, right. she's DJed so. Some of everywhere. It. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, every time I look at a flyer, it's like DJ Cash Sharon. And I'm just proud of it. Do you still get nervous after having been as seasoned as you are?
I get nervous. Not as often, but there are certain gigs where I still get nervous. So, like, even tonight, before I came here, I DJed Jose Olivares' book release party. And I was somewhat nervous because it was at the National Museum of Mexican Art. So it was just the nerves of, like, well, what do I play? Because I know Jose and I work with him, and I'm like, okay, well, this dude loves Ja Rule and Ashanti. But
that's what you got to play then.
Right. But it's also like, you know, I wanted to also match the theme of the book, because the name of the book is Citizen Illegal. Right. So I wanted to make sure that I incorporated like some of his heritage in the music that I played. And I mean, some of the mixes that I did, I thought they were great because I was dancing on stage and other people were also reacting very well. But yeah, my nerves still kick in. But like North Coast, I was nervous like no other. I think my nerves really kick in now when it's my first time performing for a new audience. Because so many of my gigs are just like reoccurring audiences, or it's like same venue. So with that, I don't get as nervous. But when it's like a big event, it's people that I don't know, then the nerves kick in very heavily. Yeah,
I think that's going to start happening more and more to you, though, because you're going to have people that follow you to venues,
right?
That know you.
Yeah,
the crowds will get bigger, but you'll be like, okay, that person, I know that person,
right?
You know.
Which is beautiful. And it's still weird to me because it's like, oh, like you like what I do. Like you listen to what I did last time.
It's like humility. Look at, she's blushing. No. Dimples coming out. You're so like, cute.
Your whole body just curled in like, oh
man,
my gosh.
Right. Because I'm so super humble. And
I know,
it's like,
you are.
I just get up and do the work and then I just mingle and then I leave and that's it. But now that people are following me more avidly on social media and they're starting to get more verbal, like they'll tell me like, hey, this is DJ's trash, where are you? And it's like it's like I can't walk up and steal the spotlight, right? Even if I was in the area. But
are they like at the DJ, so you walk in and they're mugging you like, I think I've seen these tweets,
right? The DJ's looking at me all cross-eyed like, oh, it's you, you're the one that they wanted instead. So
I saw some of that during the North Coast voting. People were like trying to trash the other people in the lineup and you were like, no, like I'm in really good company.
Yeah,
everybody's cool.
Yeah,
may like, the best person win.
Yeah,
also may it be me, but also
yeah for sure. I was like, yeah, these guys are cool, but like also I need this, like I want
to. What do you do to get your nerves to bring your nerves down when before these big shows when you get nervous?
I pace back and forth a lot. Thank you, Andrea. I heard you. Thank you. I pace back and forth a lot. I try to eat. I've learned that before I would never eat because I would just be so nervous.
Yeah.
So I eat.
But you need energy for all that.
Yeah. So I eat and then I listen to R&B, like 90s R&B music. I listen to music that I know I'm not going to play during my set.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the number one thing that I do. And my friends hate riding with me to my gigs now. And that's fine.
What's your go-to 90s R&B song that you play?
Oh, ooh, that's a good question. Probably anything by Aaliyah.
Yeah.
John B is also a good one.
I got nervous. I was going to say, don't say R. Kelly.
Oh, no, definitely not. Definitely no. Not.
We do not speak his name.
No, we do not. That's blasphemous.
Oh, my God.
No, Aaliyah. Actually, you know what? Color Me Bad has been in the playlist.
Oh, okay, this is like the
very
second
often
time.
Right now.
Color Me Bad has come up in conversation just randomly like three times in the last 24
They're
hours.
Good.
What is the message for me about Color Me Bad?
I don't know. They're good. Do you know any of their songs besides the main one that they have out or no?
The main one? You're not going to say it on the air?
I'm not going to say the song. No.
The song?
You can.
I'm just not in an agreement because I don't know this group. I don't think I know
Are
this
you serious?
Song. I don't think.
You oh would recognize.
I know their song, but I probably don't know their name. Is that what's going on?
If you play, if you listen to this, there's a song called I Want to Sex You Up. And if you heard that song, that's Color Me Bad.
Right. But they have other hits as
they
well.
They do, yeah.
Yeah.
They're, you know, I think there's some, I don't know, at the time, I feel like there was a little bit of, you know how like the way people talk about Nickelback?
Oh, yeah.
I think there was a little bit of that going on at the time. Like with Color Me Bad, a lot of people were like, but you know what? It's a good jam.
And then later on, you find out, like, okay, they weren't that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bop. It's a really good song. It goes over very well at my various
Here's my association with it, and then we got to go to break. And that is, there was a young man, when that song came out, that was going to be real subtle and pursue young Amy Guth by dedicating that song to me. You know, on, like, the Friday night, like, hotline on the radio.
Oh,
and
wow.
They play all the... I mean, I was, you know, I was...
Too young to have that song dedicated to you.
Too young to have that.
Did he get the date or
no?
No,
absolutely not. I had never even like had a conversation with the guy barely, and then he was like, "I was like, that's your move."
That was a good way to shoot a shot, though. That was a great shot.
No, it's the wrong song, though.
I mean,
yeah, you got to. I need a little romance, please. You skipped some steps,
but he was honest. I appreciate his honesty in shooting his shot. I mean, I'd rather you be honest.
Swing than... for the fences, son. Sure. But like...
Amy was just like, no, I'm not the one for this.
I was
this.
Like,
this is not
no.
me.
You're going to need to back it up and come in with a different approach.
But... So then what song do you think would have been appropriate for the dedication at the time?
I don't know. I mean, a nice slow jam. You know, you need a song with talking in it.
She say she just a friend.
That's the one.
No. Right, that would have been, that would have been the song.
Yeah, something with Barry White talking in the beginning.
You got to, right. It's
this
got
goes out to Amy.
That's right. A little bit of girl at the beginning. Right.
We've got news on the way. WGN Radio. We'll be right back.
You know, you talk about Color Me Bad, and there it is. You speak it into existence. A little Color Me Bad, All for Love, and that's the number four, not the word. Because it was the 90s, and you spelled things with numbers.
Yes, you did. That's how you paged your loved one.
That's right.
Domacy, do you know this song?
Yes, I do. I do know this song. I did not know the name of this Grammy Award winning group, though, when I heard
he wasn't familiar. On the break, I was schooling him a little bit about Color
Me
Bad.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad that you did that.
That's
thank
right.
You.
Amy Guth and Domacy Bongo here on WGN Nightside this evening. Taking a trip down 90s music lane is what we were doing. However, we have lots to do on the show tonight. We have lots of yes. things to discuss, and we are joined now by phone by Tiffany Seibert, who is the founder of a program called Cop to Yoga, which is a fascinating program, and it is exactly what it says, what it sounds like, right? It is bringing yoga and meditation and centering to Chicago police. Tiffany, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Amy. Thank you, Demetti.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us. First of all, how did you even think about bringing this program about? How did this happen?
Well, you know, I was sitting on my mat one morning, and it was right around Thanksgiving 2015 when the violence on the streets was every day on national news. And it was like a bell rang, and I said, oh, my goodness, the police need to do yoga. So I called that day, and... they said, you know, when can you come over? And I said, well, you know, whenever it's convenient for you. And they said, can you come right now? So that was in the 24th District, which is in my neighborhood. And that's really the beginning of it. And they were very, very open to it. And the program has changed a lot. And it's evolved into what it is now, which is basically a 7-minute meditation at the roll call. So... that's where we are. You know, it started out on mats, and it evolved into just yoga breathwork meditation while the cops are just sitting at the roll call. It's the last thing they do before they get into the car, and they really like it. It's worked out incredibly well.
Well, you mentioned that it was really well received, and I think we think of cops being these like tough, you know, non-emotional, like yoga would not be something that would necessarily be something a cop would be open to, but it sounds right. like that was not the case.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's not across the board, you know, it's not 100%, but it's close to 100% because it's very straightforward. As far as, you know, yoga, you know, there's no chakra talk. it's super bullet point. And as a result, they get it because it's evidence-based. You know, I'm telling them exactly what's happening, that they're activating a parasympathetic nervous system response. They're activating the endocrine system, and this has this particular neurochemical effect. And so they're on board with that.
Walk us a little bit more slowly through that, Kim. You just put a lot of multi-syllable words out there. I'm just going to be... I got my dictionary open, but I couldn't get to all of them quickly enough. But it's true. There's science behind the effect
right.
that these things can have on your stress hormones, especially
right.
with your adrenaline pumping. What is the science behind this?
Exactly. So what they're experiencing each day is just the unknown and unknowable. So that in itself is stressful. and then you back it up with the actual scene, right? You're going from a bank robbery to a barking dog to maybe a domestic dispute, everything in between. So they are in fight or flight a lot. So kind of almost like a PTSD state. And long, deep breathing, which is exactly what we start with, it activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which stops the production and flow of the stress hormones that flood the system during fight or flight or sympathetic nervous system. So it just brings you back to center. So it's like the antidote. And so that's the first thing, and that's the easiest thing. So that's the first breath work. And then we go into a second breath work, which is a deeper calm. So we're just really breathing on the left side, long, deep breathing on the left side. And so that takes them deeper. But then what's different, I think, about this than just breathing is that we're focusing a gaze in the middle of the forehead, which is a specific energy center in Kundalini yoga, in particular, that that activates the endocrine system. And so the pressure on the pituitary gland, the pineal gland, this is forcing these glands to secrete and create an overall sense of balance and centering, and it ends up really just, that's where the neurochemical change happens. And so their stress really melts away, and they're feeling 100% whole again after this.
So there is a little bit of chakra talk right there. Mm-hmm.
That was chakra talk. We got I'm her talking to say to you chakra. Guys now, but yeah.
How were you able to condense something this involved into 7 minutes? Because, you know, you said it started as 40 minutes. How do you get all of this goodness down to 7 minutes and still allow it to be effective?
Well, it's effective really pretty much after about 3 minutes. So that's all it takes. And so when someone says, well, you know, I really can't do this because I'm busy looking at my phone, I'm like, you know what? You're inhaling and exhaling anyway.
Right. You have to breathe, sir.
Might as well make it count.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So if you just, if you just say, I'm going to just for the next 3 or 4 minutes do this, then you're really doing something good for yourself that has a benefit that you feel.
And what are the results that you're seeing so far?
I'm seeing people walking out really, really grateful for this, you know, saying thank you a whole lot, you know, which is really, really nice. But they're saying, gosh, I feel so much better. I'm starting my shift on a high note. When we are in really intense situations, it helps us prevent tunnel vision, you know, which is, these guys are dealing with a whole lot of stuff, right? And it helps them to prepare for stress. And it helps them to recover from stress. So it's kind of good before, during, and after. And what I've tried to drill into them as far as, you know, folding this into their technique so that when they're walking from the car to the door, when they're walking from the door to the door of their house, when they're walking wherever they are, to just take a few deep breaths to keep evenness within their days. Mm. So it's not so jagged, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I see a lot of police all over the place in my neighborhood, and I stop them all the time. And so, of course, they see me and they swear that they're breathing, you know. So at least it's a good reminder. But they are, you know, and I've got cards that they've got that have all of the curriculum on it. And I think that slowly but surely, because I'm a broken record, I'm just saying breathe, breathe, breathe all the time. And so that starts to sink in. That's how we learn, by repetition.
We're talking to Tiffany Seibert, the founder of Cop to Yoga, and she teaches police officers how to breathe, collect themselves before they have to go out there and do their jobs. And most of us don't have jobs as intense as police officers, but what can, I don't know, talk show hosts do to de-stress before shows? And what are some steps that we can take that are pretty easy, that'll walk us through some of the things that you talked about, so we can get our chakras aligned?
Well, I think one of the best things that you can do, and it's super simple, is long, deep breathing. So breathing, inhaling and exhaling in and out of your nose. And what you're doing when you're doing that is breathing into the belly, chest, neck, head, all the way up, and all the way down. And by the time you get to your second inhale, you realize that your breath has naturally deepened. So you're activating the parasympathetic nervous system naturally. This is, it's not a belief where people are saying, gosh, I don't believe in yoga. You know, I'm not going to do this. This is biology. This is yoga science. This is how we're built. We just were not taught this from, you know, in school when we were 4 years old, 5 years old. This is how we're built, and this is why it works. It never doesn't work. So if I'm going to use a double negative there to just underscore the fact that it does work, it always works, period. So as someone that's working and you're stressed out, everybody's stressed out, everybody has different stresses. If you just take a couple of minutes to breathe every hour, every couple hours, when you think about it, long, deep breathing into your belly, into the, you know, all the way up, that's the thing that works.
We just did it just now.
You we were really did. Saying as that. You
we
were
looked
talking.
At each other and like both took this giant breath. We did it.
And it really so does work.
Yeah.
It really does. Work. It always works. So the thing is just to take
I like
a pause.
Never doesn't work. That something never is more work. Powerful about the double negative. I'm not going
right.
to lie.
That's right. You know, and I think, yeah. Tiffany, what you're doing is so very important, especially, you know, right now we're seeing headlines. Like just the other day, we saw about a headline about an officer who had taken her own life. And, you know, yeah. we're seeing the impact of these kind of stresses on people doing this work. And it's so very important to, you know, to be able to, for anyone in any field, but especially in a field that literally is a matter of life and death with every decision. Right. To be able to have that kind of center and that kind of recovery from stress.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I certainly couldn't do it myself. I mean, it's so much stress. But, you know, that's the stress on top of just the everyday stress that people have when, you know, you're married, you have children, you're living in the city, you know, with everything going on in our collective world, you know, all the things that we're dealing with. And then to have this on top of it, it is, it's a lot. So, as an occupational hazard, you know, I think that this needs to be part of just their shift. And so it's kind of why I started it. I thought this would be a really great, a great idea for them to have it be part of their 8 hours on the job. You know, that this is what you need to do to take care of yourself, because your job is, it's got such corrosive attributes to it, you know, to you as a human being. So this helps.
Tiffany, you've been in working in a couple of different sectors, though. I mean, the business magnate all over the world, liberal arts. I mean, your background is extensive. How did you even get into yoga for yourself personally in the first place?
Well, I started doing it when I was 18. My mom got me into it. And then, you know, moving to Chicago, and Amy can tell you, certainly we've got so many amazing teachers here. And so I started studying at Priya Yoga with Janice Ailman. I studied with Paul White. Just, you know, Shakta Kaur at Kundalini Yoga in the Loop. Amazing, amazing teachers that are real guides for me. And so, you know, you just want to do yoga all the time. So there was a point where I was doing, you know, taking 9 yoga classes a week, and that was a bit radical. And so
you're like breathing for a living. Is that what you're telling us?
I was kind of breathing for a living. Yeah, I was in a I was in a pose for a living. I was a poser. But I really thought, gosh, I really want to do this for myself. I wanted to take a teacher training for myself because I liked it so much, and it was so helpful. And Kundalini really spoke to me because the true base of Kundalini yoga is that it's just ancient yoga science. So that's why this works. And that's what I found to be kind of the most direct route and the most effective in the shortest period of time. You feel the effects from it. So I love that. I'm a Pure Barre junkie. I mean, I do that for like hardcore exercise. But
that stuff is no joke.
I missed it. What's
Pure Barre?
What's Pure Barre?
Oh, you're going. You're doing it.
Uh-oh. What is this? I'm scared.
If you put like very heavy duty ballet and aerobics and Pilates together, that's Pure Barre.
And push-ups and boot camp stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No joke.
Okay.
I thought I was going to pass out. The first time I went, they were like, if this is your first time, take it easy. I was like, I'm very fit, thank you. And then 5 minutes later, I was like, I'm going to die.
You know, Tiffany, just hold on 1 second. We're going to go to break so Amy can give me a crash course in push bar. What is it, push bar? What is it?
Pure Bar.
Pure Bar. Can we do this like in the break? Can you show me some things and then we post it on Twitter or something? Why did I just sign myself up for this?
I was
just
saying, this is your idea, man.
You've been warned.
We're going to take a little break. Amy Guth, Doma Tipongo here on WGN. Back in just a bit. I see what you did with this song there.
Thank you.
Esteemed producer Cash.
Thank you.
90s R&B is the theme.
That's the theme tonight. It's all about the R&B from the 90s. Amy Guth and Doma Tipongo in on WGN Nightside tonight. We are talking with Tiffany Seibert, who is the creator of Cop to Yoga. You can find out more about that at cop2yoga.com. See, it's a play on words.
It is.
And she's teaching us law enforcement, but also like copping to it.
Yes.
Taking to it.
Yes.
See what she did there.
I see what you did, Tiffany. Yeah, how many cops are copping to yoga? How many people do you have involved?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So this is so great because we just had an article in Yoga Chicago magazine about us about a week ago. And ever since then, our districts are almost not only doubled, but beyond doubling. So a number of teachers have come forward to say, I want to be on the Cop to Yoga Peace Force. And so I was in the 24th, the 20th, and the 17th. We're adding the 3rd district. We are adding the 18th district. We're adding the 19th district.
Wow.
And that's just this week. Yeah. Oh, the 16th district. I don't know if I mentioned that. I trained someone on Tuesday. Another really great yoga teacher shadowed me today, and she'll be teaching in the 18th. It's so exciting for me that there are people coming forward and saying, you know, I really want to do this. And it's also great because one of the commanders from the 3rd district called me, the commander from the 3rd district called and said, I want a yoga teacher. And I don't have a yoga teacher yet in the 3rd. And I said, you know what? So I'm your girl and I'm going to do it. So they are scheduled for the 24th and the 20th is going next week. So,
wow.
It's really, it's fun. It's exciting for me, honestly, personally. It's just, it pushes me outside my comfort zone every single time. I learn something new, I meet new people, and it's really touching. I enjoy it a lot.
That's good stuff. Before we let you go, let us know where people can find out more information.
So coptoyoga.com, as Amy had said, we've got a Facebook page, Cop to Yoga. We are on Twitter, at Cop to Yoga. And so anything further than that, if you go to the website, it's got a lot of information. It's got a lot of information about how the program started, information about what we're trying to do, our mission to join volunteer yoga teachers with their respective police districts. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Tiffany. I've got to get a class in sooner or later. Tiffany Seibert with coptoyoga.com. Thank you for joining us. More show coming up in just a moment. Doma Tipongo and Amy Guth on WGN Radio.
I mean, when we said that there's a musical theme tonight, we nailed it.
This at midnight is perfect.
I mean, this is pretty sweet. Pretty sweet jam here. Amy Guth, Doma Tipongo here on WGN Nightside this evening with you till 1 a.m.
Our producer is Cashera, and that's why she's DJ and producer on this side of the Mississippi.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. In studio, I'm really excited about this one. We have Adrian Ermer, because last year I had a chance to go to this film festival, the Social Change Film Festival. Actually, the proper name is probably Change Fest.
We're branding Change Fest now because the original name was the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival. And it's like, say it's that 7 times fast, right?
Right.
So it's social media appropriate.
Got it. It's put on by the nonprofit organization Social Change. Mm-hmm. You're a board member
Correct.
Of Social Change. Yeah. And thank you for joining us in studio.
No problem. Thanks for having
Welcome
me.
Welcome to our new home at WGN Radio.
This is fancy. Everything is so shiny.
How do you like the new digs? We got the lights set up nice for you.
I like
it.
The view.
Yeah.
I'm going to reserve a spot here for the fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So tell us about the festival and mm-hmm. the organization and all that good stuff.
So Social Change has two major programs. We've got the Change Fest, which is a social change film festival. We've showcased over 175 films since the inception of the film festival.
Wow.
Which equates to about 50,000 hours, I want to say. No,
how many
15,
years?
15,000 hours worth of film.
Sorry, I said control. How many years has it been?
This is our seventh year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So our filmmakers come from across the globe, and we cover all sorts of social issues and social justice issues globally. So this year, for example, we have films that are featuring farmers in Indonesia, workers in India, and school students here in Chicago, and then also public education systems even in New Jersey. So the breadth of the films that we showcase are vast. And then the second program of Social Change is the Liberty Project. And what the Liberty Project aims to do is, in short, the way I like to tell the story, is disrupt systems of inequity, and specifically dealing with incarcerated populations and reentry populations. So how do we treat incarcerated populations with humanity and dignity? I mean, ultimately and ostensibly, the goal of the prison system is rehabilitation. So, you know, how do we actualize that goal as opposed to creating a pipeline that creates recidivism and keeps people engaged in the system? And then on the other side is that once they get out, how do we remove barriers so that they can stay out and not end up back in the criminal justice system?
So where do you start with that? I mean, that's a big project. That's issue that a lot of people are thinking about and talking about. Where do you even wade into that water first?
On that side, we engage a lot with stakeholders on the ground. So we've actually been successful in directly passing or assisting the passage of 40 pieces of legislation nationwide. Wow. So, for example, here in Illinois, we've expanded access to video visitation. Mm-hmm. So, as you know, most of our state prisons are very far away from the core centers of populations that are incarcerated and their families, and it's really hard for working families or retired mothers to get down to the state penitentiary in central and southern Illinois. So they've expanded access. We were able to win expanded access to video visitation. In other jurisdictions, we've negotiated removing barriers to acquiring licensure once you're out of the system. So, for example, in many states across the country, it is incredibly difficult to get a barber's license if you've been formerly incarcerated.
I did not know that.
And you might cut hair the entire time you're inside the system, and then you get out and you're like, I want to continue to cut hair, and the state licensure requirements keep ex-offenders from getting those kinds of licenses. So those are the kinds of pieces of legislation that we look at. We work with on-the-ground partners, and we say, okay, well, what are some of the barriers that you've identified in your jurisdiction? Because we're familiar with Illinois, because we've been, grounded in Illinois for so long. But if we go into, somewhere like Georgia, we work with the partners on the ground to say, hey, how do we help change legislation to make your job easier and to make the system more just?
And as I understand it, some of your members are in D.C. right now,
right?
The Congressional Black Caucus, trying to schmooze to get some of these.
They're working.
Right. Air quotes.
Really, really hard. No, I mean, our executive director, Todd Belcour, is the most amazing one-man show like I think you will ever see in the nonprofit space. He's an attorney. He handcrafts the majority of the legislation that we advocate for with the organization. And I mean, just like, he travels the globe, lives off of very meager wages. But he does it for the love and the desperate need for this kind of work, right? And this kind of change. And then the film festival is like a more laid back, creative outlet for the kind of issues that we're trying to bring attention and advocacy to, and it's not so tense.
Right. Yeah. Well, one interesting thing about this is that you often don't see that arts component in, you know, they're usually very separate. You've got your lobbyists and you have activists and organizers doing things around legislation and very specific mm-hmm. tasks. And artists are usually over here doing similar work with an end goal, but never, not often together, not often right. merging paths. And I think it's a really interesting validation yes. of the power of art to make change.
Right. I mean, art imitates life, right?
Right.
The best and the worst of life. And I mean, it is a direct reflection of sort of who we are as a society, locally and globally. And sort of our lens is art as a truth-telling vehicle. Mm. So when you come to the Social Change Film Festival, be prepared to have all the feels.
Oh my God.
You're laughing, you're crying, you're laughing again, you're pensive. Like, it's just, it's a really awesome ride. I mean, we've got fashion shows this year, musical performances. So it's really grown into this very all-encompassing, you know, scope of art and life. Yeah.
Amy took the words right out of my mouth, though, because it's rare that you find an organization that has this rare mix of execution and also understands the soft skills that go along with the qualitative side of things mm-hmm. when it comes to art and what that means. How did you guys know that marrying those two things together would be effective as it rolls up and funnels up into your mission?
Our amazing executive director, Todd Belcore. I mean, really, it is his vision.
How much does he pay you to say these things?
Nothing. I'm actually raising money and donating my own money to do this. But no, really, I mean, this was part of his vision. I mean, the Liberty Project sort of grew out of the initial work of the film festival. And I guess having interacted in these spaces with these amazing storytellers, you know, he realized that there was a space and a need for an organization in Chicago and Illinois to do this kind of work. But then if you know, sort of pull back and take an eagle's eye view, I mean, this is a national issue. I mean, the prison industrial complex is real. There's so much work to be done to bring justice to an unjust system, especially for people of color. So, you know, he found a gap and he is running in that gap and making huge impacts for the dollar. So our thing is that you donate to social change, your dollar will go very, very far. We are a very lean, mean staff. Most of us are volunteer. And we're running off of the passion and the need to do the work and constantly asking for dollars to keep doing the work. Because Todd would like to be able to stay in a hotel in most of the places that he goes to. He's often on sofas and like with friends, and just like because of the you know, his network and his amazing spirit, he's got a lot of supporters who will let him crash on sofas very frequently to be able to do this work. So
we're talking to Adrian Ermer, one of the board members on Social Change, a nonprofit that is committed to this work, most specifically the Liberty Project and Change Fest 2018. Mm-hmm. Socialchange.site.site is where you can find more information and get tickets. And it's a fusion of film, fashion, music, and art. And you're in the film space as well, yeah. Amy. What are some of the things that when you guys are, I guess both of you guys, when you guys are sourcing films, how do you parse hundreds and hundreds of films?
Not easily.
And figure out, yeah, what should be part
we
of the
We go through
festival?
A lot of popcorn.
Right. I bet.
Well, sometimes it's, to program a film fest, sometimes you have to make some hard decisions. And sometimes it has nothing to do with the quality of the film. It's just like, well, we've already got this one mm-hmm. about this topic. We can't have five about this. So which one are we going to go with? Well, we only have 90 minutes for that night. We're going to have to go with the shorter one.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it's really practical things like that. It's not easy to program.
Right. And then you've got the different lengths of films. So yeah. You've got the super shorts, the half length, the features. I mean, it's a lot. And you kind of have to time it so that you get a little good mix of every topic area, but then also to incorporate the the paintings and the fashion and all and the music. It's a delicate balancing act. Our curators are great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just do the film part at my film festival. We haven't gotten to the stage with fashion and music yet. We just show up, sit down, please watch. Thank God you showed up. Bye.
Right.
And we've got some great music, too, coming up in the festival. Leon and the People, Chicago. Chicagoan who you've seen in like the Commodores and the Five Heartbeats.
That's
and
cool.
So, the Temptations film.
Right, and the Temptations film. And we've got Kim Whitley, who's doing a book signing there. And, you know, she's a fantastic comedic actress that I pretty much grew up with, I guess, at this
Me
point.
Me too. Oh, my God. I'm getting chills. I'm going there
Hashtag
just to meet
sort
my
of millennial.
Aunt. Yes. To meet my aunt in my mind. Like, she's been on The Wayans Brothers
right?
and Married with Children and Martin and pretty much every sitcom in the mm-hmm. 90s that goes along with the music we've been playing.
Yeah.
She's acted right. in it.
So what are the, like, the can't miss things for this festival? I know none of it.
I know none of it. Yeah, seriously. And like, actually, it's all half price right now.
Okay.
Oh, so for awesome. The low, low cost of $150, you will get an all access pass, including all of the receptions and the VIP stuff, for the weekend of September 28th through the 30th. So that's a steal, honestly, because of all of the amazing films that we have coming in. But we have a film, about the 63 boycott, where 650,000 public school students walked out here in Chicago
wow.
because of the segregation mm-hmm. in our school system. So I'm really excited to see that. I mean, obviously I'm Chicagoan and a little bit partial to Chicago
sure.
history.
Absolutely.
But no, I mean, there's a fantastic film about a Muslim and a Catholic farmer in Indonesia and how they come together in an interfaith way to economically build this very small city in Indonesia. I'm just like, whoa.
Wow.
You know, I mean, you're going to get a whole lot. I mean, the organize, there's a film about a person, I can't, he's like a community organizer, but he does international community organizing work specifically in labor. And so he goes into India to organize the rickshaw drivers, the rag pullers. I mean, just these very sort of fringe labor industries in that particular location that desperately needed some attention and the ability to demand more for their work and their value as contributors to that society. So yeah, no, it's, I mean, you'll get a little bit of everything. Just go to the website. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
I was a little overwhelmed looking at your schedule. I was okay.
It's hard to pick. It is, but because I'm on the board, I'll be there the whole time, so I'll get to dip in and mm-hmm. and see everything that I want to see if I'm not, you know, working a table or schmoozing.
And tell us where it takes place. I mean, that's got to be house a ton of people for
we
this.
We will be at the historic
come on.
Yes.
Come on.
DuSable Museum of African American History and Culture. And I'm very, very excited about that. My mother is actually the president and CEO of the DuSable Museum here in Chicago. And she's been doing amazing work at the DuSable, including for the first time getting the Smithsonian affiliateship for the museum.
Yeah.
So now, you know, we're part of a national network of amazing museums, and we're bringing Change Fest into the DuSable, which is very fitting. Mm-hmm. I mean, Margaret Burroughs, the founder of the museum, was a force, but she was also an artiste.
Yes.
And so I think it's really fitting to have the Social Change Change Fest be there this year, and I'm really excited, and I hope we can continue that partnership. So,
and I can't overstate it. I went last year, and the diversity of the mm-hmm. types of films, like when you say international film, this truly was an international story. Mm-hmm. And some stories that are like germane to the human experience, like that. There was a film that I saw, I remember it vividly because I almost cried while we were watching it. It was about domestic violence, mm-hmm. but I believe it was in South America or a Spanish speaking country. But the way different cultures handle different things that happen all over the world informs the way we, you know, it changes your perspective on how things. What are some of over the past 7 years, long time, 50,000 hours of films? 15,000.
I mean, after 10,000, who's counting?
Who's counting? Who's counting? What is the film that has moved you the most?
Ooh,
and that had you coming back and telling someone, like,
that's tough.
Got to see this.
That's tough because the filmmakers who end up being a part of the show or the festival move you in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And I guess it just depends on the day and what that particular film makes you feel, that it specifically resonates with you. But I do remember a film. It was narrated by Anthony Anderson, who's like you know as this very iconic comedic voice and personality. And it was a super serious movie about the future of our workforce as it's evolving alongside technology, which is evolving much faster than our workforce. And so, you know, he narrated this story about how do we prepare dislocated workers who are in the steel or in the iron or in the coal industry to do new jobs until they're ready to actually retire. And it's, you know, it talked about automation and sort of like what's going to happen when we have these self-driving cars and they're not just here and there, but they're everywhere. You know, what does that mean for the future of our workforce? What does it mean when we can 3D build the majority of an entire building, right? Like, it was a very eye-opening film, the juxtaposition of this comedic voice with this very serious content, and then, like, the, oh, dang, I'm certainly glad I have the degree that I have, because you will never not need government employees.
Right. Oh, my Lord.
Because eventually, like, you still have to have people to administrate. So.
Right. Someone's got to shuffle the papers.
Right. Exactly what I was going to say.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God. Now, this is amazing stuff. This is amazing stuff. I don't know, man. The last time I went, I was surprised by the fact that, because this was Jess Todd at the day that I went, it was Jess Todd running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
Oh, my goodness.
Trying to get everything squared away.
It was him and Emil. That was like it.
Yeah, yeah.
The very first one.
And it was at the Harold Washington Cultural Center last year. And all I could think about was, as he opened up and he talked about trying to stop recidivism and how many black bodies are incarcerated. And he talked about this marriage between the arts and activism and how we might see less recidivism if we met more people where they were. Mm-hmm. Like, we saw the impact of 13th, the documentary by Ava DuVernay about the prison industrial complex, and Kalief Browder's story. What do you think we gain from telling these stories through film, and how does it move and feed into the work on the ground as it comes to executing at a legislative level?
I think the best way to sort of get at that answer is that storytelling through art has a way of hitting people's ears differently than if you're sitting in front of them talking about a white paper or talking about a legislative proposal, because I think that human aspect of that human connection to the stories really helps to impact and amplify a message or an experience. And so I think art is just very unique in that way. To be able to reach people and tap into that empathy of another human being.
Yeah, kind of letting people have the realization on their own rather than telling sometimes.
Right. It may not have to be your lived experience, but there's something very impactful about watching somebody live through something and tell their own story and see their pain. It's an incredibly powerful tool to motivate and move people.
That chuckle you heard wasn't because Adrian was laughing at the power of art. It was because we're in our ear, our producer is yelling at us to take a break. So we're going to take a break.
Sorry, Cash.
I was not yelling. No, it's okay. It's Domity's fault.
Don't put it all on me. I'm sorry. I was really into it. I shed a
Let's
tear.
Say, important conversations.
Important conversations
were being had.
Yes.
But nonetheless.
Nonetheless, we've got to pay some bills. So we'll be right back. It's WGN 720, WGN iSat.
720, WGN. You know what? Time flies very quickly on the radio, Domity, is the problem.
It really does. It really does.
We already got to say goodbye.
We're having fun. Thank you, Adrian, for stopping
by. I was.
Yes. Tell us one more time where we can get tickets and all of that good stuff.
Socialchange.site. S-I-T-E. Somebody had already purchased the other domain, so we had that one now. They bought .com.net.org, but they're not even using it. I know it's annoying.
You know what? And if you follow me or Domity on Twitter, which you should be doing, we're going to tweet out links to all the stuff we've been talking
Absolutely.
About tonight, so you can find all this stuff for yourself. And it will be on wgmradio.com on the podcast made by esteemed producer Cash.
Awesome,
Adrian. Thank you so much.
Thanks
for having me. 720 WGN. Amy Guth, Joe Matipongo, here on the Night Side.
You trying to send a message to me, Cash? Is this what's happening? You tired of arguing? I'm sorry.
You guys are in a fight.
If that's how you want to take it, don't make me. I just picked it because it was Aaliyah. But if you want to take it that way,
this is a
then
good
yeah,
song.
We
I love this song.
This is one of my favorite songs, man. One of my favorite producers is Timbaland. I don't know if you knew that. Timbaland is one of my favorite producers, and Aaliyah is she was a treasure, man. It's sad when she passed away.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you again to Adrian, by the way.
I know. So many cool things happening at that film festival. For real. I looked at the lineup and I was like,
it's intense.
Real overwhelmed with things. I don't have that many outfits to go to all those things.
I was going to get a Social Change t-shirt so I could wear the same shirt all weekend.
Don't be that guy that wears the shirt to that event.
That's how you do it. No. I've got on a free shirt right now from like some TV hit I did a while back.
Well, yeah, that's fine. But like if you wore the WGN radio shirt here, then you're that guy. You can't wear that event's shirt at that event. Guy.
That's economical. It's like double branding.
See, sometimes I have other radio station shirts and I'll just...
You'll wear them at the other station? Like you'll have
like I walked in here with a Vocalo shirt on the other day.
How dare you?
I know. Just because I can.
The gall.
I know.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. And then you go to Vocalo with a GN shirt on.
When they invite me.
Right.
I can't just show up and be like, I'm here for some programming. When they invite me. Please, I have been, my night show, the Saturday Night Special, has been preempted for like 4 months with White Sox. So I was like, I'm not even welcome on my own station.
On my own station. Those Sox do it every time, man.
I mean, if you're going to be preempted, like it's pretty okay. I mean, I'm good with it being the Sox.
If it's going to be anybody preempting, it's got to be White Sox.
Because I've been at the station long enough now that I've been preempted by Cubs, Sox.
I'm actually in the newsroom. I'm happy when I'm preempted by the Sox. Because I just get to like file stories. Like I get to read.
Yeah.
I get to catch up on everything happening in the news. Call every like source that I've been wanting to call. Chop some audio. Just do all the busy work. And then you have like 50 stories filed away that won't get used because they'll be old by the next day. But they're ready. And it's just something to pass the time. Make the day go by quickly.
So what do you think is the biggest misconception about the job that you do here? Mm. Like when you're explaining to people who are not in this business, what do they get wrong?
That is a good question, yo. The biggest misconception is that there is somebody telling you what stories you can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
That there is some big force that says you must report this story this way. And that's completely not true. Like newsrooms have, and anchors and reporters have a lot more autonomy than I think people know.
Yeah.
I think what does happen because of what's going on with the news industry, a lot of newsrooms are shrinking. We have tons of resources here, but I've been at other stations that didn't have as many resources as I have here. And shortcuts get taken by reporters. And that's not to disparage reporters, but it just so happens that you'll run with, everybody's running with the same lead. A, because yes, it may be the biggest story, but when you don't have the time and the resources to dig a little deeper and see what else might be just as big of a story or what might be a good neighborhood story to tell in an X community that doesn't have reporters visit every single day. So the news can be homogenous, not because there's someone telling us what stories to report.
Right. But just sometimes it's easy to hop on the dominant narrative.
Because at the end
of the day, like, reporters are still human beings.
Yes.
You know, and there's, this is what this is. Like, things get accepted as truth.
Yes.
You know, a narrative about a neighborhood, a people, a person, things get accepted as truth that are not truth. Obviously, one misconception is people think that we go into radio for the money. That's not it. No. But I think we...
It's a passion.
Haven't necessarily done a great job in our business of explaining how that process works, like what you're talking about, but also like the different roles of like what is the difference between a reporter and a host or a reporter and a columnist at a newspaper. you know, like we're all under the banner of journalism.
Yes.
But like how that breaks in, because people be like, well, that person has bias in the thing he wrote. I was like, well, he's a columnist.
He's a columnist. He's supposed to have a bias.
If he doesn't have a bias, he's not, you know, he needs
a
take. He'd
be a terrible columnist.
Right? He'd be a terrible columnist. Right. Yeah. Now, it gets tricky when you're breaking that down for somebody, because like, well, but a columnist can also report, but a reporter cannot pontificate.
Perfect. And in this age of spin, one thing always used to be true, and they talked about this, Scott Stances, I think, was on little bit earlier, he was on the Missing Rascals. They talked about this before, that even in columns, there was a time when the facts were presented and you could parse opinion from fact within the story very easily. The fact is, this thing happened today. Yeah. Now, here's what I think about this thing happening. What's happening now with these pseudo news sites is that the facts are in question, and then it informs an opinion, and the opinion is based off a horrible premise that is totally inaccurate. And that is very frustrating for journalists and people online alike, and that's one of my biggest frustrations.
Yeah,
and when the public doesn't know the difference between the editorial board and the actual reporters, and it becomes I can see how it can become confusing about who to trust.
At least once a month, I'll see somebody tweet something like, "Oh, I'm canceling my subscription to whatever paper because of the editorial board." When it's the Tribune, I'm like, okay, I've worked in that newsroom. I worked there for many years. Let me explain to you.
Uh-huh.
The editorial board cannot even see the newsroom. Like, it's a totally different area. It's a different wing. Same floor, but different wing of the floor. Different door. I mean, it's very intentionally a different group with a very different... You know, the edit board doesn't represent the reporters in there. And I was like, don't punish reporters and get reporters laid off because you don't agree with somebody on the edit board, you know, by canceling your subscription. That's what's happening. That's why newsrooms shrink.
You know, you guys can jump in on this, too. Colin, tell us what you think about the state of this news business.
312. We're asking for it. Oh, my God.
981-7200. Should I do this? Text us so we can choose.
That's right. So we can infer the tone and assume it's more positive.
Yeah, and then we can editorialize it this way. But
I'd say this, too. I think that we also, first of all, anytime someone says the media, it drives me crazy. Because we don't have a morning meeting.
Right.
You know, there's not one media, because that implies we all share a brain and we just all do the same thing. And in that, we also often overlook the role of social media in a news cycle.
Yes.
You know, for example, if, you know, I one time shared a story that was, it was during the NATO G8 summit. It was in Chicago. And there were details emerging about an arrest, and it was very important in the headline that said, you know, the following occurred, : police say. And the police say part is really important because I was not there. This is a statement issued by the Chicago police.
But when you lead with what the statement is and then the comma police say, and you're reporting as a reader, the inference is what the police said.
Right.
Was accurate.
Right.
There was at my old gig at WVON, we were aware of this, especially with the Laquan McDonald case when it first broke several years ago. We were aware of this disconnect between, and we started to see that, you know, different stories get buried and different accounts get buried about, and people making complaints against police officers started to go underreported. We had this meeting with the Sun-Times. They came to WVON. It was Mick Dumke. Back when he's in L.A. now, who used to run the Sun Times? The name is escaping me right now. Frank Maine is a crime reporter.
Yeah.
And the former head of the Sun Times. I'm so mad I'm blanking on this. And Mary Mitchell was a columnist. But at any rate, they talked to the public and the community about how they failed the public in their reporting of police cases and how they took what police say for truth. And they said, we always attributed it to police, but we didn't push back often enough on what it was that the police were saying. And that has been corrected in the news industry to our credit, about going back and saying police say X, Y, Z, but according to the police, doing that extra step of going to the police report, finding out what really gets said. And we're going to tweet it out, too, by the way. It's my Twitter is Dometi, D-O-M-E-T-I _, so you can see what this story was like. But you guys definitely check it out. And you can follow Amy Guth at Amy Guth, A-M-Y-G-U-T-H. But these are the things that make it very difficult
very
to get the job and make it make it frustrating. What aside from the pay gap, right. what have been some of the biggest misconceptions about what it is that you do?
I think that part. I mean, I think especially now in it, with social media playing a role in the news cycle, when things get omitted from a tweet, like when you're quoting like a police statement or a political office's statement, and it's like the following. Says the White House, the following police say things like that. And then the next person tweets it and they clip that part off.
Ah.
And so it looks like I'm saying this thing or I'm saying, you know, whereas it's a sentence from a statement issued by the White House. Things like that get so frustrating to me because we have to recognize the complicity of the role of social media in the news cycle. I think that's so important. But I would say beyond that, I think it's very difficult to explain to people some of the, like, what all goes into a story and not just the facts of it and the reporting. I think it's hard to understand, to explain a long tail reporting. Like, I worked on this for months and these are the people I talked to. Like, you'll talk to so many people on background that you may never quote in that. So you don't interview somebody just to get a quote, you interview them to understand
what's happening.
So I think that part, but then also the amount of disclosure involved, mm-hmm. like things you have to tell your editor of when to recuse yourself from a story, things like that.
Yes.
Of the potential for like a conflict of interest. I think I wish people knew that stuff.
And how much work goes into making sure that we maintain our credibility by exposing, hey, by the way, I've worked with this person before. I might not be the one for this story.
Like, here's a great example.
Jim Kirk, by the way, is the name of the Sun-Times
Jim
publisher.
Kirk, there you go. There you go. Uh-huh. This was also at the Tribune. So I had a family member, I've talked about this on this station many times, but I had a family member killed by a drunk driver when she was 24 years old, and it was just, you know, instantaneous. And and there came a moment in which very straightforward thing needed to go up on the Tribune website, just saying, you know, there had been a wrong way driver, someone driving the wrong way on Lakeshore that hit somebody, and there were fatalities being reported, and the police believed that alcohol was involved in the crash. It was like, I was the obvious person there right then to put that, like, more details coming soon, because it was going to be impacting rush hour, things like that. It was late at night. So I was the obvious person to put that up on the website, but I didn't. I put it to somebody else because there may be the impression that I wouldn't have done so fairly. Like, I would have cast some aspersion on the driver who has not been convicted of anything at this point, right? Because I have had this experience in my family, that I would have this bias against this person. So even though it was kind of like a pain in the butt to go get somebody else at that hour when newsrooms tend to be less staffed, like my editor and I had a conversation and decide, like, I'm not going to be the one to touch that story. Someone else will. And I think letting people know how many conversations like that happened.
Oh my God.
You know, like, even there was an obituary that one time I needed to write because it was definitely on my beat and I was the only one covering that beat. But I knew that person pretty well. And I really didn't feel like it was fair of me to do it. And obituary is different because often we turn to family members to do it. And certainly family members have a bias. But I really just felt like I'm not the one to do it because I can't be objective. I might paint this person more flatteringly in death.
It'd be too flowery.
Yeah, because I you know, was a personal friend. So I think things like that, like, we drive ourselves crazy thinking about that kind of stuff.
I don't think you were wrong if you written that story, though. I think obits are different.
I think obits are a little different. Yeah, and I've thought about that. But you know what? The person that wrote it did a beautiful job.
That's
so it was fine. And actually, like, wrote it better than I would have. And I can admit that. I can totally admit that. So, Amy Guth, Doma Tipongo here on WGN Nightside. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Sometimes you get away from all these rumors. I can't take it no more. My best.
WGN Nightside, Amy Goof, Doma T. Pongo, right here. Just 10 minutes left in the show, but we're having a fun show, a great conversation. We talked to Adrian Ermer from Social Change, talked to Tiffany Seibert from COP to Yoga, and we talked to DJ Cash about her inspirations behind her DJ career, and apparently 90s R&B music is one of the things that calms her spirit, and that's why we've been playing 90s music all day. What was that we were just listening to, by the way?
That was Timex Social Club Rumors.
Yes,
that's actually an 80s song, I believe.
Yeah, it was.
Yes.
I was going to say, we're stepping out of the 90s.
We are, but it fit what you guys were talking about, so that's why I went with that.
You're very good at matching subject and song.
Thank you. I learned that from the Chicago authors. They helped me with that. With listening to poems, then playing a song to follow it. So I've learned to really match a mood based off of them. Shout out to them.
That's really dope. Nice. That's really dope.
Hey, and we got a caller.
Yeah.
Let's do this. People are actually awake at this hour. Hi, Joe. You're on WGN. Thanks
kiddos. Hey, listen, my degree is in journalism way back when from the good old Penn State University.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know of which I'm talking. I just want to congratulate you guys on addressing a very current and very complex, yet very, very important issue, the mass media, if you will. I don't care about print. One of my favorite guys is John Cass, so I'll support the Chicago Trib most of the times, probably about 65-70%.
Yeah.
But the deal is, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, what am I talking about, anonymous, and they put so much emphasis on giving just the world of credit to the anonymous person.
Yeah.
And I'll quote Trump, anonymous or something like that. Okay?
Right.
It's credibility, which I don't think the Washington Post and Mr. George Soros, you know, his company, if you will. So I think the people, the public, has a real, you know, challenge nowadays, which you guys have addressed. What's the source? What's the credibility? And all that good stuff. So it's challenging times we live in. And I think you've covered a lot of the bases regarding it's our own prerogative, the individual. Check the source, check the credibility, and weigh that against what's being said. Just like, you know, your example currently, the police. Was it the chief of police? Was it a sergeant on duty? Was it a patrolman? Whatever. The press is supposed to dig and be more detailed in the source for information. We're in an age right now where the market demands spontaneity, too much spontaneity. There's no time, you know, they think, okay, to go and check, you know, all the sources, all the credibility. So that's an ongoing problem.
Thank you.
I commend you for addressing it.
Thanks so much
for raising that. And Joe, you bring up a good point, too. He brings up a good point about that New York Times article. I was listening to an interview with the New York Times and Bob Woodward, who just wrote the book Fear.
Yeah.
Actually got my copy here. I haven't even cracked it open yet. But Bob Woodward, you know, he was asked by the New York Times reporter, you know, they were interviewing about the book, and he said, well, what did you think about us using anonymous sources and running this op-ed anonymously and our reliance on anonymous sources? He said, well, I like to use the word deep background rather than anonymous source, because the source isn't anonymous to me. As the writer, you know, I know exactly who the source is. Yeah. And you know, later on, and he has the credibility, of course, from Watergate. And he said, the source, I know who that source is, but the problem is you want to be a little bit more specific. What department does this person work? If you're talking about a senior official, what makes a person senior? Right. How long he's been with what office? You have to give a little bit more. Then he talked about how in his book, which does rely on deep background or anonymous source, is somewhat synonymous. He gives pictures and specific dates and times and accounts of things that have happened. And I think that adds to the credibility, because there are times when you have to rely on anonymous sources, because if I have to do an expose on the life of Amy Guth and I'm friends with Amy Guth, I don't want her to know that I'm telling you all this information. So you're not going to get what you need from people if you don't.
I hate to tell you, that would be a very boring expose. Not much there.
The truth behind yoga.
Right. She wears yoga pants. It's true.
It's true.
That's the end of the expose.
Right, right. She wears t-shirts of rival stations to work. But, you know, and so I mean, Joe, you know, kudos to you. He brings up a good point about how sticky it can be. And even when you have journalists like Bob Woodward looking at the New York Times, a highly credible outlet. And I personally liked seeing those perspectives, seeing those op-eds, because they didn't differ much from what Wood was talking about in the book. So it seems to be credible to me. But I do see how that can confuse the public.
Absolutely. And I think anytime, you know, anonymous is, you know, the word thrown, like, it's, you're asking your readership to trust you. Yeah. Like, believe me, I have a reason for not telling you who wrote. Like, that's really problematic, because that's the whole thing, is you only have your reputation in this business. That's why I cannot stand to see journalists tear each other down.
Yes.
Especially in public forums.
Yes.
Like, all you have is your reputation. And it only takes a second to cast the seed of doubt on another journalist, and it can take them a lifetime to undo it and to shake that. So I think that kind of thing, like, I cannot stand when they're, like, a little friendly banter, fine. But, like, actual trash talking, I don't like it.
Yeah,
I'm not here for it.
There has to be more cohesion in this industry. And you're starting to see it, but unfortunately, I'll just put it out to you like this. What did you think about all of these newspapers coming together to denounce Trump's denouncement of news media? And they pretty much wrote this op-ed, 200 or so newspapers wrote that op-ed, right, and said, you know, that we stand together, you know, protecting First Amendment rights, protecting the news industry.
Well, I would hate to be on that email thread, because it was probably 600 people.
Right. No, we should use this word. No, we should say that.
Right. I mean, us organizing, like, you know, the holiday party here is a whole lot of email. Like, I can't imagine all of that it was involved in making that op-ed. You know, I think it's interesting, right? Because I have felt a difference, and I don't know if you have, WT, but I have felt a difference in, because what happens when that narrative emerges about fake news media, like, people grab that. Mm-hmm. And a confirmation bias happens on all sides of the political spectrum.
Yes.
In which you can be saying literally the opposite of the dominant narrative. This has happened to me. In which, like, a lot of people are saying X about the White House said this. But a lot of people are kind of, there's chatter online, whatever. I'm saying the opposite. Or I'm saying, have we considered this point and been on the air saying that? And yet someone has called or texted to say, see, you're doing that thing, saying that dominant. I've said, I'm literally saying the opposite thing. So this confirmation bias happens. That's really dangerous. And that's another reason why I really push back when people say the media. And when I see people tweet that and say, the media is saying this about Trump, the media is saying this about anything,
right,
Serena Williams about this, like,
but I'm, Breitbart is also the media.
Exactly what I always say. I'm like, Breitbart's also in that game. Social media users are also in that game.
Yes.
If you feel like there's an issue or an inaccuracy, what I want people to do instead is say, you know, so-and-so's column in whatever outlet called it this. I wish that, you know, call out a specific thing.
Yeah.
And not even a paper, because look, you and I both sat in newsrooms in which, like, the sports department doesn't know what the books department is doing.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, even though they might sit 20 feet apart, like, they got
silos.
Nothing to say to each other. They're doing their own thing. So it's like, if saying this outlet says, well, no, that one guy writing that one column said that.
Yeah.
Hold that to him. You know, where I think it gets real interesting, it's when it's against reporters, because I think there is a great accountability that can happen. You know, we see this in a lot of Middle East reporting. There's a lot of think tanks trying, like, what is the verb you are using when you're talking about one country versus the other, when you're talking about, like, Israel and Palestine? Mm. And sometimes a bias can be shown by saying, like, pushed back, defended, assaulted, you know,
yes,
things like that.
Yes, yes,
we
yes.
see that in the way we talk about crime. We see that in the way we talk about protests. When different people and different groups of people are protesting different things in the city, sometimes we've used different language to describe its peacefulness.
Yeah.
And so we need to be really consistent about that. And we could rant for another several hours, but we got to go, is the thing about that.
What? 1 o'clock.
Oh, it flew, Domati. I hope we get to do this again.
Yes, this is a ton of fun. Listen, had a lot of fun. Amy Guth, follow her on Twitter, follow me on Twitter, and you can see the links from all of the guests we've had. Had a ton of fun. Thank you so much to Cash. Appreciate
Anytime.
You.
Anytime. Thank
yes.
you. This is great. It was my night.
I like how you're waving.
Yes.
Waving to the people at home.
Yes, to everyone.
Waving
yes.
for radio. It's
Thank
like
you.
Radio air quotes.
Right, right.